Reference Ranges, a novel interpretation of turfgrass nutrient values, Travis Shaddix, Christopher Ryan, and Kaiyun Tang presenting Travis Shaddix.
Thank you, Bill. I'm Travis Shaddix from the University of Florida in Fort Lauderdale, and I'll be discussing reference ranges as a potentially new interpretation of turfgrass nutrient values. So when we talk about turfgrass, when I'm speaking reference ranges, I'm going to be speaking specifically about turfgrass tissue in the form of clippings that you might collect from a mower and send off to a lab for analysis. In 2009, there was a survey published that indicated that the United States 18-hole golf courses, about 30% or so, use tissue testing to either apply or not apply fertilizer. Where's the mouse, Bill?
You
have to use this.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. So somewhere around 30% of the 18-hole facilities in the United States utilize tissue testing. And if you run the math on the total kilograms applied on the United States golf courses, about 91,000 kilograms are applied. So roughly, if you take 30% of that, about 26,000 kilograms of nitrogen are applied based on tissue testing, with phosphate being 9,000 kilograms and potash being 26,000 kilograms. So it is a significant use of tissue testing in the world of applying nutrients or not applying nutrients. And this is just golf courses. Obviously, this doesn't include lawn care or sod farms or athletic fields, which in some cases are substantially more than the amount that's applied on golf courses. So what is the tissue testing process? Basically, as I mentioned, you take a sample, you'll send it off to the lab for analysis. That instrument will provide a data point, and that data point is interpreted, and then a recommendation is provided. And as I'll mention, the data interpretation and recommendation are, at least in this author's opinion, questionable in terms of their value in terms of being able to provide information to the end user as to whether or not they'll see a response to that application or not, or whether or not the plant actually needs it or not. And the reason for that is, as mentioned in 1994 by USGA Green section, do turfgrass tissue levels exist, baseline levels exist? And the answer they mentioned in 94 is no. Nutrient concentration levels were established from forage grass species, and at least according to the USGA back then, it's at least questionable as to whether or not the use of forage grass data is useful in our world of turfgrass on golf courses. So there are interpretations that do exist. We'll talk about these five briefly: the Macy's concept, the critical nutrient range, the diagnosis and recommendation integration system, compositional nutrient diagnosis, and then survey ranges. So each of these have a little different slant on how that data is interpreted, and we'll discuss that briefly. The Macy concept, in 36, Dr. Macy published this paper basically saying that as the nutrient concentration in the tissue increases, you'll see an increase in the yield of that plant to a certain point, and at some point that yield will no longer increase, and potentially the nutrient concentration will continue to increase. So that's deemed luxury consumption, and that point, which if I can get this mouse to work, that point, which is right here, is deemed the critical concentration according to Macy, and so anything below that point would trigger a recommendation to apply a nutrient. Similar to Macy's, the critical nutrient range, instead of providing a single point, they'll provide a range here where you see a point of diminishing returns as nutrients in the tissue continue to increase. The yield will increase to a certain point and then begin to decline. And so anything below this point here would be deemed deficient and would trigger a recommendation to apply a certain nutrient. Anything above this point would be considered sufficient. And then the only other difference would be between this and Macy's would be at some point the level of nutrient in the tissue could become toxic and result in a reduction in yield. The Diagnosis and Recommendation Integration System, or DRIS, essentially uses ratios of elements to each other to determine whether or not yield is maximized or not. So in this case, Dr. Snyder and Fort Lauderdale, actually, where I'm from, used the nitrogen-potassium ratios and nitrogen-manganese ratios and so forth to effectively determine whether or not the element was impairing the growth of St. Augustine grass. Again, using yield. The second to last one, compositional nutrient diagnosis, it's very similar to DRIS. Rather than using just a single ratio of one element to another, it would use all possible ratios of elements to each other. And again, providing an interpretation of whether or not, interpretation of the test and a recommendation as to whether or not you should apply nutrients based upon some ratio of N to K or N to K to P or whatever. And again, basing that on yield. And then the last one, which a lot of soil testing and tissue testing labs utilize, is what's called survey ranges. And survey ranges are essentially good estimations of what should exist, but they're provided when the element concentration in the turf grass is not clearly known to be deficient or toxic. And these authors state that in the preface to this book by Bryson. So they're good ranges, they're good estimations, but as I mentioned, they clearly state it's not known whether or not it is deficient. Let's say nitrogen is 1.79% to 2.69%. It's probably a good estimation, but it's not clear. Each of these interpretations utilize yield, and that interpretation metric is valuable for agronomic crops. These tissue testings, I don't think anybody would disagree, that are greatly of great value for cotton and soybeans and whatever agronomic crop they provided these interpretations for. But for turf grasses, where in many cases we're applying plant growth regulators to reduce the growth, it's questionable as to whether or not these interpretations would be of value. So instead, if we were able to use a common metric that we use, quality, or acceptability, or some may deem it health at a certain point, that may be a little bit more relevant to us in terms of playability of the turf. If it's a 6, 7, 8, or 9 on the NTEP quality scale would be acceptable and so forth. So the question is, how do we use that? So I was having dinner with this astonishingly beautiful woman, Brazilian woman, who I found out is a oral surgeon. She's also my wife. And so we were having dinner one night, and I asked her, you know, when I go to you and you take my blood or you take my blood pressure, you tell me whether it's high or whether it's low. She said, yes. And I said, well, how do you know? How do you interpret that data to say it's high or low and provide a recommendation to adjust that number? And she said, we use reference ranges in the world of health. And essentially what reference ranges are, they simply provide what is normal in the population of healthy people. Okay. So when she said this, I thought, well, that could be useful in the world of turf grass, because we already provide or assign quality ratings to turf grass in many of our studies, being 1 to 9 and 6, 7, 8, or 9 being acceptable. So if we were able to somehow identify a method to do this, we could simply partition those 6, 7, 8s, or 9s out and then determine what's normal in that population. And so the reference ranges are the standard of care in medical practices. So how they're developed, they simply define a population. They sample that population many, many, many times, and they determine the 95% population that exists. So two standard deviations from the mean, essentially, is what they'll do in medical science. So when you go to the doctor and they say your blood pressure is high, what they're really saying is you're coming very close to being outside of 95% of healthy people. So and this graph represents that. So anything that exists in these two, this blue area here or this area here would be within 95% or two standard deviations. So the interpretation of the data is not that once you get here, you need to start applying. It's just simply indicating that as you drift further from the mean, it becomes a point of concern for your physician. And in the world of turf grass, if we're able to do this, it becomes a point of concern that we want to mention to the turf manager or the fertilizer applicator to point out, if you're down here in the lower outside of two standard deviations, it's not that you're unhealthy. It's not that the turf is unhealthy, because 5% of the population would exist outside that range and be healthy. It's just simply to provide an indication as to where that element is relative to turf quality. Okay, so we did this with Palmetto St. Augustine grass, and in this particular case, we determined that 835 of these samples that we tested were at a quality rating of 6, 7, 8, or 9. So this bell curve here is the Palmetto St. Augustine grass nitrogen reference range for the state of Florida. The shaded area is the current sufficiency range. And so what's important to indicate here is that about two-thirds of the Palmetto St. Augustine grass tissue falls within the sufficiency range as it exists now, but about one-third doesn't. So about one-third of these samples would have triggered the application of nitrogen when none was needed. We know that that population was healthy. We know it was acceptable. No more nitrogen was necessary, and yet the current recommendation would have triggered an application of nitrogen in one-third of the cases. You can separate these reference ranges by time and space. And when we do that, we did the exact same study in two locations in Citra and Jay, and we do see a separation of these reference ranges, nitrogen percentage and tissue, based upon the location. Now, that may be due to numerous factors, But in this case, we're simply saying they were sampled in Citra or sampled in J. And in the case of Citra, more than half of those samples would have triggered an application to nitrogen when none was needed. So we see the influence of space on reference ranges and the ability to provide more specific recommendations rather than just the state. We can look at it particular locations within the state, or if you wanted to do it by soils or whatever population you wanted to define, it would be easily done using this philosophy. When you look at that exact same population, so among time, you can look at the influence of among space, you can look at the influence of space and time, and we look at it over a summer, we see that at the beginning of the summer in June, both the populations completely differed. But over time, they merged back together in the middle of June, and then they became they were very similar throughout the rest of the summer. About half the samples being outside of the sufficiency range, and about half being inside the sufficiency range. So you can see, for the most part, they were very similar, but they drifted up and down over the summer. When you look at nitrogen, of course, you can look at all the other elements as well. And what we would like to see from the current sufficiency ranges is what we found with phosphorus, is that the reference range for phosphorus is exactly identical to what the current sufficiency range is. But with potassium, another macronutrient, it's completely outside the current sufficiency range, which is a good indicator that what we're doing could be of use. The same thing occurred with magnesium, where the vast majority of the population exists outside the sufficiency range that we're using today. You know, just to point out that even if it's within the sufficiency range, let's take iron, it's within the sufficiency range, the reference range itself would end around right here. So we would refine that range, that recommendation range, down from the current sufficiency range to what the reference range would indicate. We don't have what sufficiency ranges are for non-essential metals. Obviously, they're non-essential, so we don't have a range for that. But what exists in normal, healthy turf in the world of sodium or aluminum, elements that could provide an impairment of turf or a reduction in quality, it's not easy to find that. We could easily do that. We've done that here. In normal, healthy turf, sodium ranges from 0.2 to 0.5, or at least according to this study. Some of the strengths, they're simple to develop. They can be as specific or general as you want. You can have a reference range for the United States, or you can have one for the state of Florida. You can have one for your golf course. It just depends on how many times you want to sample that population over and over. The points of concern is just because it's within the range doesn't automatically mean it's healthy, and just because it's outside doesn't automatically mean it's unhealthy or acceptable. It's just an indicator. Okay. So in summary, the existing interpretations are useful if yield is important. So in the case of sod farms or sport turf, maybe yield is important. Maybe you do want to grow as much as you can, as fast as you can, and turn that crop over. But in most cases with turf grass, it's less important, at least in my opinion, than the quality metric itself. So reference ranges can provide specific or general recommendations. And for now, the St. Augustine grass, at least palmetto reference ranges for N, K, magnesium, and copper, do differ substantially from the existing sufficiency ranges. So we'll be refining our internal recommendations, at least at the University of Florida, accordingly. With that, I'd like to acknowledge the Florida GCSAA, the Central Sport Turf Managers, and the Environmental Research and Education Foundation, who graciously donated funds to purchase instruments to run these samples. If anybody's run nitrogen tissue the old way, the digestions and TKNs, it's very labor, it's a lot of acid. Well, when you do it through combustion, as I'm sure a lot of people are converting to, it becomes much more rapid, much less expensive. We didn't have that. And with the thanks of these supporters, we now do have that, and that's the reason we were able to get this study completed. With that, do we have time for questions, Bill?
We have time for a couple questions. Anybody?
I don't want to put you on the spot, Frank, but I know you got some questions. Oh.
Well, I mean, so I don't think it's any mystery. So Test has been selling a lot of fertilizer for a really long time. I'm sort of wondering, do you walk around Florida talking about these things at trade meetings? How does that go when you, I mean, this is very much in line with the MLSN stuff that Mike is doing, right, with some real data. I mean, not that they weren't taking soil state, but yeah, you're going the tissue route. My question would simply be the variability we know that exists in tissue testing sometimes based on water content.
Sure, yeah.
All those other things. Did you find that when you did this one?
Variability in relative to the water?
Well, variability in tissue testing.
Well, yeah, the bell. I mean, there's great variability, particularly with the metals for some reason. With copper and aluminum, there's a tremendous amount of variability in those two metals for some reason. So sure, yeah. All we know is that we selected samples only from acceptable turf, and whatever the population is, and whatever that number is what it is. Yeah. So yeah, there's a great deal of variation. There's no question about that. Some of them less so than others. Phosphorus is very tight. Go ahead, Paul.
So, how
How much would you expect that to vary with species?
Tremendously, in my opinion. Even within cultivars, let's take Celebration compared to 419 or whatever. There's published data that the nutritional needs of those two cultivars of Bermuda do differ greatly. So I would hypothesize, if you will, that the tissue nutrient levels would potentially differ greatly among those cultivars. So the reference range or the recommendation provided from those is only as good as the population that you specified. So if somebody provided a sample to me for a Celebration, for example, if I don't have a reference range from that, I would indicate that and then provide the next best solution, which would be whatever we have for Bermuda, you know. But it would differ greatly, yeah. What do you think?
I think it would differ.
Yeah.
Among species, I would hope it wouldn't differ among cultivars, because that's going to be very problematic.
Sure. We've done the same thing with Bermuda. So we have the ranges for Bermuda starting to come in now, and they differ greatly from St. Augustine grass, at least for Palmetto St. Augustine grass.
The water content would be important to me.
No? The water content of irrigation?
Of the cells.
Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely, yeah. There's great differences in those species.
All right. Any other questions? Otherwise, if you have any questions for any of our presenters today? No? All right, well, thanks
Thank
for a great morning session. Thanks, Travis, thanks for coming.